This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
I would love to introduce our next guest, Lino Latorrula from Simply Spanish. Welcome to the program, Lino.
Thank you very much.
Now, you are not only run a restaurant in Melbourne called Simply Spanish, but you are technically the best paella chef in the world.
Well...
Literally.
Just well, say,
outside of Spain, they consider it the best outside of Spain. I still can't top the Spanish, so I just can't seem to beat them.
You can't seem to beat them, no. But you were there at the international competition,
absolutely,
which was held just a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, it was. It was held in a little town called Sueca, just outside of Valencia, whereas legend has it that it's the birthplace of the paella.
Paella. That's how they pronounce it.
Correct.
There. Wow. Okay. We have, because you've got those two L's.
Yeah.
And when you get those two L's together,
it's a different letter, yeah.
So tell us about what it's like exploring, going to that kind of competition, like how many people are competing from what kind of countries and, you know, what it's like. Because you did it with your son, Jake.
I did, yeah, I did.
Who should get some credit as well.
He should get some credit too, because it is a team effort, because unlike... cooking a paella at a restaurant, we have to do this on fire. And so you really need that cooperation with the assistant chef, because you've got to have that flame always at the right level. So when you want it to boil, for example, you need a high flame, and you've got to work together. Otherwise, it just doesn't work. You end up with a pan of, not an award-winning paella, put it that way.
No. So it's like bubble and squeak at that stage.
It does, yeah. Look, it's a really difficult competition, because everybody's competing there. Now, there was 43 teams from all around the world. We've got teams from the United States, Japan, France. There was lots of them from Spain and throughout Europe. And we all start off with the very same ingredients. Everyone is doing the exact same paella.
So they hand you the ingredients.
Everyone gets
with
the same, yeah. It's what this competition is all about is maintaining a tradition. The tradition is about the authentic Valenciana paella. They consider everything else a variation of that. So, what they try and do is preserve that particular recipe. So therefore,
How is it typified, that recipe?
What are the ingredients?
Yeah, balance.
Oh, well, okay, this is the... It starts... we've got chicken in there. We've got rabbit. We've got caracoles, which are snails. Green beans, dry beans, and garlic and tomato. With
so
a few
none
spices.
Of the clams and seafood that if so...
That's a variation that's come along. Look, it started off as a peasant dish.
Yep.
So as you can imagine, those ingredients are pretty much what you'd find on a farm.
Mm.
And as the dish...
It was slow enough to catch.
Yeah, true. And as a grew in popularity, you would only use what's available to you. So if you're in a coastal area, you're going to make a paella using seafood.
Yep.
And so that's where it all began. But
there
are so many different versions of this and so many different ways of doing this, and, you know, how they prepare it and how you expect it to be here are very different things.
Mm. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
And is there a requirement that you use Spanish rice?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, nothing else works. And it's not only Spanish, but it comes from that region. It comes from Sueca and the rice fields around that area.
Mm-hmm.
Which is in the Valencia area.
In that province, yeah.
And like with so many other things, one of the undervalued ingredients is actually the water. And using, now I'm not sure how that plays out. I know in some foods and some beverages, the water flavour and where it's from plays a big part of it.
And the minerality, yeah.
But not in making paella.
Well, they say it does, you know. Everyone else from around the world has to use their water, so I don't know. I mean, when you try it, you're trying a lot of different paellas, and there are differences there. But to really narrow it down to just the water, I find it impossible to do.
What would you typify as the ingredient that really gives it that signature taste? Is it apart from the rice? You said the rice
apart
coming
from the rice. I think the paprika plays a big part of it.
Yeah,
locally
grown, locally
it's
smoked.
Spanish paprika, yeah. So they would use a smoky paprika or just a plain paprika. But also it's when you're building the paella, when you're cooking it, you start by frying the chicken and the rabbit and so forth and the green beans.
When you fry them in just oil?
In olive oil, yeah. And it's amazing how much olive oil you really do need to use, and I think we underestimate the value of olive oil in cooking. And it does take a substantial amount of olive oil to do it. And if you don't use the a generous amount of olive oil at the beginning, you're not going to get that really vital, important thing at the very end, which is the succadat. Mm. We all want that crust. It cannot be done unless you put olive oil, a sufficient amount of olive oil in there.
Mm. Right. So and the key ingredients are always heat, lipids, fats.
Yeah.
So that's the oil, sour, which would be the tomato.
Well, tomatoes usually is mainly in there to deglaze the pan. So once you've fried everything off and you've really browned everything off, you would add the tomato in there just to deglaze the pan.
So how is the tomato prepared? Is it like a sugo or
it's fresh tomato, and they're from Valencia. I don't know if you had one of the tomatoes from Valencia. I drove into this town and it said in a big billboard there, "Welcome to I can't remember the name of the town, but it said the home of the world's best tomatoes." And I thought, well, that's a pretty big claim.
That's a big call.
That's a very
big call. And so I went.
They're not native to Europe.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And so I went to this little town and I thought, look, I'm going to go to one of the cafes. I'll have a beer and I'm going to see if I can try one of these tomatoes because they make these beautiful, these lovely tomato salads. And so I ordered the tomato salad, and it wasn't a fancy restaurant by no means. It was just a little bodega.
So what kind of tomato salad? We just
diced the ugliest looking things you've ever seen. But, and they always say that when you buy them, no son muy lindo, pero son muy sabroso, they say, which means they're not very beautiful, but very tasty. And so then they make this little salad, and I thought, well, it's pretty basic, you know, salt, olive oil, and that's pretty much it. And I tried it.
And how do they cut the tomatoes?
Just slice it.
Just sliced.
Slice it.
Not diced, directly, just sliced. So laid on a flat plate.
Flat plate.
Oil, salt.
Olive oil and salt.
Okay.
Oh, God, if the tomatoes are good, that's
and
fantastic.
And there's pepper. Oh, my God,
so
I'm heaven.
So, one, it's the tomatoes must be ripe for one. Yeah. And they're always firm even when they're ripe, which is amazing. And two, they must be at room temperature. And
oh, not chilled.
No, not chilled. And so when you try this, oh, God, this is just amazing.
And just with a beer?
Just with a beer.
Perfect.
And so that was lunch, bread, tomatoes and a beer. And I thought, oh, I can't believe it's as simple to please somebody here.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm really getting hungry. That's one of the challenges about having this show over lunchtime. We're always talking about food and very hungry. And we've got our special guest in here today, Lino Lateralla from Simply Spanish, who is talking all about paella and his recent win at the international competition in Valencia. Thanks so much for coming in. We were just having the most incredible conversation about tomatoes. Now, you've travelled to Spain a lot. You must have it's such an incredible cuisine. What do you love a lot about Spanish cuisine?
Look, I think I love the simplicity. When I travel to Spain, I try to get away from the tourist traps. I'm looking for funky little bars or cafes that do more modern type tapas. I'm not looking for the typical montadillos that you'd probably find on Las Ramblas or the paellas that they would serve or paellas that they would serve on Las Ramblas. I'm looking for little cafes and bars and restaurants that either specialise in paellas or just go off the beaten track a little bit with their tapas. They're not just doing the normal tourist thing.
The ham and cheese croquette kind of thing.
No, So I mean,
the patatas bravas,
that sort of thing. Yeah, because I mean, you tried them all in my eyes, and I'm there to experiment and to look and find ideas. So it gets fairly difficult because unless you know where to go, it's really difficult. So I'm getting better at it, I must say, because I now get a lot of the locals to help me out with this one. I've been there so many times, and I'm getting to know a lot of people. So they sort of steer me in the right direction, and I found some really amazing places that serve some great food. And then I try to take some of those ideas back here, but look, it's not always possible. They've got some ingredients there that it's very difficult for us to get.
But water, light, air, experiences, ambience, it all changes how food comes across as part of the dining experience. So to transplant something from another country, you can't just rest it in another and forget about it. You have to create everything else around it.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'll give you a simple example is the jamón. We were just talking about jamón during the break. And jamón in Spain is never refrigerated. It's cured with a bone, and they just slice it straight off the bone, and it has a beautiful, amazing flavour to it. And if you're lucky enough to try the Ibérico, that has that the flavour of the the acorns that the pigs are fed. Mm. And so it actually it translates through the meat. You could actually taste it. When we get it here in Australia, we may get the same Iberico ham, but it no longer has the bone. It can't be shipped with a bone in it, and it's been refrigerated, and it stays refrigerated. I think because of the way it's done, how the bone is removed, it no longer can just be preserved without refrigeration. Straight away, you taste it, and it has got a completely different flavour. It's just not the same anymore.
How does the flavour profile shift?
I really don't understand how it shifts. So I'm really not a bioscientist or anything like that. But all I know is it just doesn't taste the same. And I was absolutely in love with the jamón in Spain. I couldn't get enough of it. And I get here and I think, well, it's great, but it's not quite the same.
Well, when you chill food, it does alter the flavour of it.
Yeah, it does. Well, the lipids harden, which is one thing. So all the fats harden.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's one.
I mean, you can taste, you know, a beautiful craft beer will taste completely different if it's icy cold than if it's got a little bit more of, I'm not going to say room temperature, but a little bit warmer. Mm. And I would imagine it's very similar. And it's travelled, you know, I mean, the ham has travelled a great distance. And I'm sure that the bone has a lot to do with it, which is one of the reasons why.
The bone has got a lot to do with it, yeah.
It's not allowed to come over with the meat, which is, I guess, really sad on one level, but, I mean, obviously necessary. That. For some sort of...
I don't understand that. I don't know.
We have to look into that one.
Yeah. I don't quite understand. And the other thing I don't understand is if the meat, for centuries it's been done this way and it is hung without refrigeration, but suddenly we have to have it refrigerated here. It just doesn't sort of make a lot of sense to me. But, you know, that's another...
That's just science.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of issues about food and maintaining it for health practices and that sort of thing. But let's go back to talking about the exotic components of the food in Spain that we love.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in Barcelona and I stumbled off Los Ramblas and into the old quarter and found a fantastic Basque tapas bar. And the Basque serve their tapas in a slightly different way.
Is it pinchos?
I think it's similar to pinchos, where it's served on little pieces of bread with the sticks.
Montadillos, I think they call those, yeah.
But
which
of course,
just translates as something on top of bread.
Is that right? It's so simple.
So it's a sandwich.
But of course, one of the other most famous destinations in Spain for food is San Sebastian.
Correct, yeah. That's an amazing city. Not only has it got great food, but it's a very beautiful city in itself. I was lucky enough to go there a couple of years ago, and you've just got to forget the diet. you've just got to enjoy it. And the wines are just amazing. You really struggle to find a bad wine.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. They're very, very particular about their wines. And it's near their wine district, so they've got access to a lot of good wines. Mm. But there's another little town that people overlook, which is called... goodness, now it's escaped me the name of the town.
Make it up, we won't know.
Yeah.
We can look it up in the break.
It'll come to me in a moment.
Speedy Gonzales, that's fine.
But it's just in the Rioja district where the wines are from, and Logroño, it's called.
Logroño.
And they, in my eyes, I thought that the tapas there were amazing. I think they were on another level above San Sebastian. And once again, the wines, being in the heart of the wine district, it was just phenomenal and really inexpensive too.
Well, that sounds incredible.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to go and explore that part of Beach Spain a few times, but never explored that part of it. When you visit Spain, you come back to Melbourne, and how do you incorporate some of the things that you eat and experience there to Simply Spanish, your own restaurant?
Well, I've got to find things that I feel that we can do here in Australia, because there's a lot of dishes that they prepare in Spain which I think are wonderful, but I don't think that the Australian public really would pay money for it. I just think that they are.
What is that?
Well, look, they're big on a lot of stews. They use a lot of ingredients. For example, the jamón, the bone, is used for certain soups. They use pheasants, quails. They use
so game,
a lot of game, and a lot of this stuff is very readily available. And also the snails. It's not as exotic as we make it out to be here. Like, it's something very unique that we must go to a special restaurant to have snails. It's available at your supermarket.
Yeah, well, oysters are basically coast snails.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a bit of a snail fan, but I've only really experienced them in the French way. Lots of butter and garlic.
Yeah, and I'm a butter and garlic fan, so...
Well, with that, when in a page, it's The reason they put the snails into the paella originally was that the snails were found on the farms, and they would eat the... rosemary. So they would impart this rosemary flavour through the paella. So you cook the snails and you suddenly have this rosemary
infusion.
Infused paella, yeah. And so that's where the snails come from. So every little ingredient on there, just it does have a little bit of history to it.
Yeah,
why they use certain things. And so today we just take it for granted. That's the recipe. We put a snail in there. But why? No one really knows.
And if that snail hasn't been eating rosemary, it's still going in.
It's still going in.
Yep. So what is your preferred way to treat a paella? That's not the Valencian way. What's your favourite iteration?
Look, I have been experimenting a lot with a vegetarian paella. I feel that it's sort of largely been neglected. And I'm trying to come up with flavours. The only problem with a vegetarian paella is I feel it lacks a lot of flavour. And you kind of want to build something that has a bit of a punch to it.
Without salt.
It does have salt, but it just doesn't deliver enough punch, and I struggle to try and build the flavour profile.
Is it the umami that's missing?
Oh, I don't know what it is that is missing. I think maybe
the
our
mushrooms.
It could be the mushrooms, but I think our palate is so used to the stronger flavours that maybe it's just me. Mm. Maybe I need to experiment more with some vegetarians and let them tell me whether or not it's good or bad.
Because things like tempeh and things that do bring umami and that sort of earthy meat mocking flavour is a thing that has a very Asian connotation. It's not easy to put in different cuisines. You can't dovetail everything together. No. Then it just becomes a schmozzle.
It does, yeah. So the one I was working on last week was a because it's in season at the moment, with artichokes and broad beans, and together it was a very very tasty paella. I thought it was very good, but then you think, well, will the public go for this one? You know,
I think the thing to keep in mind is that it's not going to taste the same.
No.
It's going to have a different kind of intensity of flavour, be that as it may, as being something that's less. But, you know, people that are vegetarian are also going to be open to you will have a lot of fans if you're preparing
it. Because you want to do something that's not just mushrooms all the time.
Yeah,
yeah, true.
Yeah.
I've missed my favourite show on Joy. What do I do? What do I do?
Podcasters to battle!
Joy podcasters fight on tirelessly to bring you the best bits of every show. So if you've missed something recently on Joy, don't worry. Our podcasters have your back. Head to joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or look us up on iTunes. Podcasters on Joy 94.9 fighting tirelessly for your listening pleasure.
Welcome back to the Escape Hour. We have been touring around Spain with our bellies and our taste buds. With Mark, Stefan and Lino.
Talk us through Spanish Food for Dummies. Simply Spanish is you focus on, and you say that you really do endorse the simplicity of Spanish food. What are the things that people who are not used to the Spanish cuisine, because a lot of people know Mexican or they know, you know, other sort of Latin cuisines, but when you're looking at Spanish food, what would you say is emblematic? What would you say this is your starter course?
Well, I think one of the key ingredients for Spanish cooking is garlic and also the paprika. Yeah. It seems to be one of the predominant spices that is used throughout the cuisine. The saffron is an ingredient that's associated with the paella. And the paella, like as we were saying before, it comes in very different forms now. So there should be something for everybody there. Everyone's adapted a version of a paella for their region, their country, their cuisine. So it's probably the best travel dish in the world. It really has gone everywhere, and it's been created in so many different ways that you really could write an encyclopedia on it.
But it is simple to replicate, hard to perfect, isn't it? A paella is not a easy thing to do. It seems easy because it's a bunch of rice with things in it, but it's a bit more than that.
Look, it is. If you want to do it right, I mean, if you're looking at the key criteria for judging a perfect paella, it is someone that cooks rice in Spain is called a rocero, which translates as a rice cooker. That's your profession. You're not a chef. You're a rice cooker because they take it so seriously. You specialise in cooking rice. And so if you look at the key ingredients now, what makes a perfect paella, it is you've got to look at how you've cooked that rice. So let's forget the flavours at this point. Mm-hmm. We're not worried about how it tastes, but has that rice absorbed too much liquid? Is it swollen to a point where it's too much? Is it undercooked? So the core, the nucleus hard. Of the rice is still hard. Obviously, that's not right either. And then one of the most crucial ones is the sukkar on the bottom of the pan. Now, to get that correct, it's very difficult. And not to mention the fact that now you've also got to incorporate flavours and the symmetrics of it to make sure it actually looks even. You don't want sort of all your beans on one side and all your chicken or seafood on the other side. You want it to look pretty. So... but I think the core is the way you cook that rice is probably the most important thing. And it's a very simple little thing too. But, you know, if we had it in a pot and we're just boiling it away, we know exactly how much liquid to add to how much rice. But when you've got it in this big pan and you've already got chicken and you've got this and you've got that and it's simmering away, how much liquid do I actually have in there?
Right.
So it's a bit of an art form to just try and make sure that you've got just the right amount to cook that rice perfectly, not overdo it, not underdo it.
Do you add any stock into the rice when you cook it?
We make the stock. Everything's done in a pan, so we'll fry the chicken, we'll fry the rabbit, then we add the water to it and let that simmer away and simmer away. Traditionally, pages were cooked by men on a Sunday for the family. That was how it was done.
Oh, okay.
And it was something that you did over hours. You would have a few beers, a glass of wine. The men would be talking around there. It seems to the guys around a barbecue today.
Right.
And they have something to drink. And as it simmers away, then you finally add your rice and then you finish it off. But a good paella can, you know, take 3-4 hours to make. In the competition, we're given 4 hours to do it.
Okay.
And you need every single minute of it.
Yeah. And a busy sun.
And of course, those huge pans.
Yeah.
So what size pans do they use in the competition?
They use a 70-centimetre pan, and we use around about 1.5 kilos of rice. You can go a little bit more, a bit less, but around there is a good number for that pan.
And, I mean, I think that one of the reasons why Melburnians love paella is because it's so theatrical.
Yeah.
You know, you've got your place.
It comes with drama.
You've got that wonderful spot down in South Melbourne at the South Melbourne Market and...
Look, we're really lucky because we've got three restaurants and all three are very unique in what they do with their paellas. South Melbourne has mastered the big pan outside, so we're that street food, that festive type of paella, and it really works so well and everyone loves it.
That's on the Cecil Street side.
On the Cecil Street side at the South Melbourne Market. At the Queen Victoria Market, we've got a chef who comes from Granada and he makes the small pan paellas and he does an amazing job with us. He's so busy, they love his food and he does a really good paella, small pan paella. And not to mention the tappers and everything else, but let's just talk about the paella. And then in Bourke Street, we've got Stephanie, who's a South American chef, who also has mastered the paella. And she was with me last year, and we came fourth in the world last year with the paella. We didn't quite win it last year, but the year before we came best outside of Spain with my brother. And this year it was best outside of Spain with my son. So we've kept it in the family in a sense.
So on Bourke Street, that's where those about 550 or something Bourke Street, there's a food court downstairs, St James or something.
St James Plaza, that's the one. Yes.
So, I've been there before.
So we and Stephanie makes an amazing seafood paella there, along with some of the others. Yeah, and she's pretty crafty with the tappers. So she's a little bit, you know, she's trying
crafty, Steph.
Well, she is. Yeah, she's trying to stay away from that typical. Potato bravas and so forth.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that's something. Not unfortunately. I mean, people do like it, and so we cook it. We serve it up because that's what people want. But we try and throw in a few creative tapas as well.
Things like that are very important when you go out. When you have some people, I've got some Spanish friends who are very sophisticated in that kind of thing. But when you go out with people who aren't familiar with the food, an introduction to things like tapas, which most people would have experienced by now, but some people haven't. Things like patatas bravas are a really good way to have something on the table that you know that people are going to enjoy. With their drink, and they might not be as adventurous or might not be so keen to turn their palate to something new.
Yeah.
So they serve their purpose, but they're also delicious. Patatas bravas are one of my favourite things.
I mean, one of the wonderful things about Spain is the simplicity of the garlic-rubbed bread with the tomatoes. Speak back to tomatoes again. Yeah. It's just wonderful, rubbing garlic on your bread for breakfast.
Yeah.
And just sardines on garlic rub bread.
One thing I couldn't get my head around when I was there is they have tortilla, which is the potato omelette. It's a fairly dry dish. Oh, actually, no, it's got a lot of egg in there, so it's fairly moist. And so they would slice that up and then they would put that in a bread roll. And I thought,
oh, really?
Yeah, and I thought, this doesn't sound right. It's just like potato in bread roll. And so I tried it because they have it for breakfast and it was divine. I've got to be honest.
Yeah, with like hot sauce?
Yeah, with a bit really of aioli or something. I thought, wow, this is just amazing. It is simplicity. Food at its the most, it's at rawest, it's most simple form. It's absolutely divine.
So what are some of your top stories for when you visit Spain?
Look, I was looking, like I said, for new destinations, new food. So I did a travel across up the Costa Brava this time around. I hadn't been there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't too sure what to expect. I've had a lot of mixed stories about it, so I thought, look, I'm going to have a look at it. Apart from being one of the most amazing coastlines I've ever seen in my life, the food was amazing too. There was a lot of rice dishes there that they were cooking. There's a lot of seafood that was being cooked. But one of the dishes that I really liked while I was there was, once again, very simple. It's called arroz con cardo, which translate rice in stock. And right. So they would build a beautiful stock, whether it be seafood or chicken or something, and then they would add the rice to it, and it's sort of a bit more like a risotto. It was a very wet dish, so it's a cross between a risotto and a soup.
Yep.
But once again, very delicious, very simple, but very, very delicious. And their paellas as well along the coast, very thin. It's a very thin layer of rice, very dry, but incredible flavours.
Is that when it gets that lovely crust that's nearly got a chewiness to it?
Yes, absolutely. That's what you're looking for. That's what the judges look for as well in the competition. They want that crust on the bottom, so you've got to have the flavour. And the way they judge it is they bury the spoon into it, the end of the spoon, and if it slides, you haven't quite developed enough crust.
Right.
If it stays, if it doesn't move, well, then you've mastered it. Then obviously they'll go into it to see whether it's been burnt, because if you burn it, then you've lost that
there
one.
There must be a hair difference between stickiness and burning it.
Well, but when you look
it must be caramelising to stick.
It has to caramelise,
Yes, which is part of the burning process.
Yeah.
So at least we know that the carbohydrates are burning.
Exactly.
Turning into toffee.
I think that, the way that rice has been prepared in Australia for many years was so woeful. I was in Milan, outside Milan, and the
rice preparers. Remember, we've had a Chinese community for a very long time.
Well, the way that I had consumed rice up until then, and, the risottos were just like bog. But I went to Milan outside at this beautiful, and I had that beautiful soft risotto.
Isn't it amazing?
That was just, I went, oh my God, this is what it's supposed to be like. Mm. And I can imagine that, well, of course, we have, fortunately have Simply Spanish and a lot of other great Spanish restaurants in town. So.
Absolutely.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Why not check out one of Joy's great podcasts? For example, The Escape Hour.
Yes.
Such a great podcast. So the Escape Hour team heads down south, deep, deep south, bask in some old-fashioned American-style barbecue. The artistic director of the Queensland Ballet joins the Sunday Arts magazine to tell the story of his incredible journey from China to the US to Australia. And make sure you check out Joy's new podcast, Hot Entrepreneur. Delve into some business hacks with two business experts. All these and more available wherever you get your podcasts. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Stefan. So we're coming towards the end of the show, and next week I should probably let everyone know that we will be going to Australia via
Where's
Canada.
That?
Yeah, Australia, so we do Canada. Have Robin Eastrock, who's a Canadian writer and has written a book on his bucket list trips to do in Australia, which that'll be fun. Now, Lino, in summation, your next role is that you are going to actually do a food tour of Spain. We know this is coming, and everyone loves a food tour. So while
we have a map of Spain on the screen here.
We've just dropped this on you, so I recognise that
pointer.
It's going to be a bit tricky. So tell us your five top destinations that you're going to take people on a Spanish food tour.
Okay, a Spanish food tour. I think a couple of years back I did a trip where I started the trip in Madrid this time around. And I went to a little city just, I think it was just to the west of Madrid. It's called, there was Cuenca, which is to the west, and they specialised. Okay, I'll go to Cuenca. Cuenca was a little town which specialised in suckling pigs. I thought that was an amazing little concept. And they would basically barbecue these or roast these little suckling pigs, and they would cut it with a plate because the proof it was so tender that you didn't even need a knife. Oh. It was sort of cut with a...
That's certainly a good trick.
Yeah. Toledo was a beautiful town with it has one of the only castles, I think, in the world, I was saying, that was virtually untouched. It's almost intact, in perfect, pristine condition. Once again, beautiful food, Avila. So these are all little cities, satellite cities that are around Madrid. So they weren't that far. So, you know, within an hour of Madrid, you were at these incredible cities. And then having gone that area, then Salamanca is a beautiful town. It's a, considered a university state of Spain, where there's a lot of students, but which is in a sense really good because the food is really good. And being a student city, you've got to imagine that everything has to be cheap as well because yep. students don't have a lot of money. So I found that a really interesting city, a very beautiful to look at. But, you know, and moving away from there towards cities like Cordoba, which is a very old city, a very old town. And all these cities have an old part of them, an old part of the city. And then obviously the city grows around it, so they've got the modern part of Spain. But these all these little satellite cities are just quite unique. And unfortunately, a lot of people just seem to go to places like Madrid and Barcelona. And neglect these other cities. Now, I can understand why if they don't understand the language, maybe that's the easiest way of doing this.
Well, thank you so much. Leno, thank you so much. We've had a lot of great tips. We need to rush.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.